Hi, this is Eric Greb, Senior Associate Editor of Neurology Reviews. With me now is Dr. Stuart Cook, Kushner and Sirwitz Professor in MS in the Department of Neurology and Neurosciences at the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, NJ Medical School. In a consensus statement published in the International Journal of MS Care, the Consortium of Multiple Sclerosis Centers recommended that the Lublin-Rheingold clinical classification of MS be modified to include MRI evidence of gadolinium-enhancing or unequivocal new or enlarging T2 lesions. We're going to talk about this statement now. Dr. Cook, what prompted CMSC to consider whether the addition of MRI tests could improve the Lublin-Rheingold classification?
In 2009, individuals, including myself and Dr. John Lincoln and others, published a paper in the Archives of Neurology in which we recommended these changes. In order to get a broader perspective of whether this was indicated, the consortium established this committee to evaluate whether these changes should be made or not, and whether there should be a consensus statement as to this.
How has evidence for a correlation between MRI findings and MS pathology gotten stronger in recent years?
I think there's multiple answers to that question. In terms of the relevance of MRI to pathology, there are relatively small number of studies, but these have pretty much all shown that there are predictable changes that are correlated with the various types of conventional MRI lesions, that is, gadolinium-enhancing lesions, T2 lesions, and black holes. And we know that gadolinium-enhancing lesions show inflammation. And we know that T2 lesions show evidence of edema, oftentimes demyelination, loss of axons, gliosis, and that black holes show destruction of the matrix of the central nervous system where the lesions appear. Now what is new is that based on studies by Filippi et al. in Italy and in our own studies in the BECOME study, where sensitive MRIs are used and sensitive techniques, including a 3T scanner and triple-dose gadolinium administration, and up to a 40-minute delay in scanning, all of which includes improved conspicuity of lesions. And where these studies are done in the Italian group every week, using a different format, and in our group every month, that it appears that T2 lesions all evolve from prior gadolinium-enhancing inflammatory lesions. So now we have a sequence that gadolinium-enhancing lesions occur. They lead to T2 lesions in 90-plus percent of patients, and subsequently into black holes, which can be intransient or chronic. And they all evolve from these inflammatory-enhancing lesions. So I think one can say with relative safety that virtually all of these enhancing lesions lead to tissue injury of one sort or another. So this is the pathology, that we're seeing the pathology of the disease through an imaging lens.
In what ways do MRI markers satisfy the Prentice criteria for consideration as a valid surrogate marker in group studies of relapsing remitting MS?
These are studies that have been done by Sormani et al. These are very important studies, and what they've done is a meta-analysis, that is, they've looked at all the blinded, randomized, pivotal trials that have been done in multiple sclerosis, both in relapsing remitting forms and in other forms of MS. And what they have found is that gadolinium-enhancing lesions, or new T2 lesions, tend to predict whether relapses as well as progression. And the Prentice criteria are a rigid set of criteria that have been established outside of the MS field for surrogacy. That is, if there's a strong enough predictive value, correlation coefficient, and you meet these criteria, then you can say that the biomarker is a surrogate or a correlate or a predictor of what's going to happen. And that's now true based on the effect of therapies on enhancing lesions and those predicting the effect on relapses and progression. So that's how this all came about. So this is a very important contribution by Dr. Soramani because it solidifies the concept that MRI can predict changes in MS, which was not well proven up until that point. And there are many reasons why the MRI has been less well understood as a surrogate or a biomarker for MS, because when the way MRIs are done in practice and in clinical trials are not done very often. They don't do the spinal cord frequently or at all in clinical studies. Brain lesions, MRI lesions in the cerebral cortex are generally not picked up by conventional MRI. And these lesions can clear up over time. They become, study shows that these MRI lesions can disappear. The gadolinium-enhancing lesions disappear, we know that. The T2 lesions can disappear from studies that have come out of the BECOME study and other studies, and transient black holes can disappear, and yet those lesions are still damaging the matrix. Those black holes that disappear and the T2 lesions that disappear are still causing damage to the matrix, the infrastructure of the brain. So that's why there's been this sort of paradox, because there's not a one-to-one correlation in general with what's going on. And when you get in the visual system, you see this correlation much better, because this is a very sensitive system, and so there's a very strong relationship between symptoms and MRI enhancement or T2 lesions in the visual system. And in fact, in our study, there's a 30-to-1 ratio between new T2 lesions, our enhancing lesions, and clinical symptoms. So there's not a one-to-one correlation. In fact, 30-to-1 with very sensitive techniques, or 10-to-1 with less sensitive, shows you the problems with identifying these correlations, that MRI really is a surrogate for the disease. Now, the other thing I'll just tell you about is our study from BECOME on patterns of disease activity. So because we've done 75 patients, this is work by Dr. Diego Cadavid, we've been able to identify patterns which occur that also have predictive value. So if you do monthly MRIs, there's one group of patients that has enhancing lesions or new T2 lesions every month that you do up to 24 months. Another group that never has any activity, gadolinium-enhancing lesions or T2 lesions. And a third group that's intermediate. And even with 75 patients, half of which are on clotrimer acetate, the other half with interferon beta-1b, these patterns predict which patients will be cognitively impaired or are cognitively impaired at baseline, which patients are more apt to have relapses, and which patients are more apt to have difficulty walking. So these patterns, which are not generally done, are showing us much more of what these correlations are. And there are many other studies that have shown maybe less robust that MRI, even at baseline, can predict disability long-term and even death long-term.
Why didn't CMSC consider advanced MRI techniques such as functional MRI, multispectral thermal imaging, or diffusion tensor imaging?
Because this is all being related to what's available and what can be done in conventional studies and practice. So most MRI centers can't do that. These are research techniques. giving us very useful information and insights about what's going on in the brain, but they're not generally done. So that's the major reason. This is a practical scale using what conventional techniques are being used around the world. And the other is that the studies have been based on these conventional techniques. And what we've learned from that and from the meta-analysis is that patients who have these inflammatory lesions may respond better to therapy, even in advanced forms of MS, for example. We know from pathology that there's inflammatory disease going on in the brain all the way through the disease. It may change in the amount of inflammation that occurs and where it occurs, but this inflammation is always going on, and we think that this is an immune-mediated disease, and that if you can suppress this immune response and this inflammatory response, you can get beneficial effects. And those MRI conventional things that we see, new enhancing lesions in their surrogates, new T2 lesions, and oftentimes black holes, are indicative of this inflammation, and the patients do respond better when they have this inflammation present. For example, in primary progressive MS, which is thought to be the slow deterioration without relapses, in one study, in the Olympus study of rituximab, they found 25% of patients at baseline had enhancing lesions. And while it was, these are patients with primary progressive MS, the group of patients didn't show any benefit over the 2 years of the study. But that subgroup of 25% that still had these inflammatory enhancing lesions did respond to therapy. So this is why we're so focused on these conventional lesions. Now, we left room in this modification proposal to, in the future, use any of these techniques that enable us to distinguish who will respond to treatment or not, or how much damage is occurring. But it's not quite ready for prime time yet.
So what effect will CMSC's consensus statement have for practicing neurologists?
Well, I would hope that, like the transition that occurred with the diagnostic criteria for MS, that we will see the same things in the clinical classification. To refresh your memory, the initial diagnostic criteria was pretty much purely clinical. It was having, for relapsing remitting MS, was to have multiple attacks in time and in space in the neuraxis, in the central nervous system. But over time, that evolved, and the POSA criteria were developed, which used other things like CT scans and other laboratory tests and even MRIs. To the McDonald criteria, where to diagnose clinically definite MS, one can use an MRI lesion as the surrogate for the second relapse and for lesions in space. So that transition's been made, and there are now studies going on to see whether even patients who've never had any symptoms, if we can have a surrogate MRI for the first attack and a surrogate MRI lesion for the second attack, but maybe you don't even have to have relapses clinically to diagnose MS. Now, that's still a work in progress. But for the clinical classification of relapsing remitting MS, secondary progressive MS, primary progressive MS, and progressive relapsing MS, that's been purely a clinical classification. So we thought that as with the McDonald criteria, there should be a reevaluation as to whether MRI should also be included, because we think this is a valuable asset or addition, because it tells us is whether or not there's still inflammation going on and whether the disease is still active, and because the MRI is much more sensitive than the clinical picture. And this has very practical correlations in terms of therapy, whether the therapies are working as well as we like, whether if we treat you aggressively or not, we can change the long-term outcome. That isn't proven yet, but there's a suggestion that may be occurring. And so that's what the importance of this is, that this further defines how patients are doing, whether their treatment should change, and may help in terms of what patients should come into clinical trials.
Thank you for your time, Dr. Cook.
My pleasure.
This is Eric Greb, Senior Associate Editor of Neurology Reviews. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.